Coming up on this episode of the NHL At The Rink podcast, we talk Blackhawks struggles. Blues, are they a playoff team? Avalanche are back. We interview Darren Millard about the Vegas Golden Knights, and we ask if Austin Matthews should play in the Four Nations faceoff if he is bothered by an injury. All of that and more coming up on this week's episode of the NHL At The Rink podcast.
NHL At The Rink is presented by Skip, the official food delivery app of the NHL.
Welcome into a new episode of the NHL At The Rink podcast. It's presented by Skip. Skip to the good part and get groceries, meals, and essentials delivered right to your door on Skip. Sean, we're recording this on Thursday. It's January 2nd. We're still in that window where we can say Happy New Year, but I already said Happy New Year to you. We were with each other on New Year's. We were with each other at midnight at the House of Blues in Chicago after covering the Winter Classic. But so everybody else hears it, Happy New Year.
Thanks, man. Happy New Year to you, too. We shared our New Year's. I almost said Thanksgiving. We shared our New Year's with the Smashing Pumpkins, which was pretty cool.
It was cool. I got to tell you, I mean, the whole experience in Chicago, and look, we know what happened in the game. The Blues win 6-2 against the Blackhawks at Wrigley Field in the Winter Classic, the second Winter Classic there. But the game itself, it's huge. It's everything's focused around the game, but this whole event transcends the score. It transcends the standings, and I thought the league did a terrific job yet again. I thought it was a great experience in Chicago. There's a lot to get to just on that alone, but I really think the Blackhawks are a story now, Sean. I don't for the good reasons, you know, but I do think that they've become a story, and I think it's because of the comments that Nick Foligno and Taylor Hall and Connor Bedard made after the game the other day. You know, it was just, you know, one of those situations where they were basically like, we owe our fans a heck of a lot more than this, right? And it was emotional. It really was. It was emotional from those three guys in particular. Team's not playing well. Team wasn't supposed to be very good to begin with, but I don't think the fans of the Blackhawks can say they had a bad experience at the Winter Classic. I'm sure they had a great experience at the Winter Classic, but the result was bad, and the players for the Blackhawks basically had two different experiences. You know, everything that they enjoyed and then just the awful feeling that they had at the end.
It's, you know, it's hard because all eyes are on you, right? I mean, this is a signature event. I thought, you know, Connor Bedard after the game, you know, said, how many teams are playing outdoor games this year? There's four. We're one of them. And we got dog walked. Great. Which term. Was a new term for me. Had to look it up in the old Urban Dictionary. But it's not a pleasant experience. Let's just put it that way. And Nick Foligno was borderline irate.
Yep.
He's the captain. Right, he feels responsible for all of this. He takes it all very personally, you know. And again, I thought Connor Bedard was—he kind of, for a young kid, he kind of hit the nail on the head. He's like, you know, we give up one or two goals and everything goes sideways, and that's what happened in this game. They gave up two goals and everything just kind of went sideways early in the first period, and they could never, you know. I thought they finished the first period pretty strong. They got a goal back and seemed to be going, and then they gave up another one, and that was pretty much all she wrote. It was all Blues after that.
But if I told you, Sean, that through 38 games this season, the Blackhawks are better than they were through 38 games last season, would you think I was crazy? Would you think I was nuts? I mean, they're 12-24-2 right now.
Yeah.
But they were 11-25-2 through 38 games last season. So they're a game better.
What's the goal differential?
Yay. Oh, I didn't look up the goal differential. Now you're asking me to go too deep, okay? I just looked up the record.
It's not wins and losses, Dan.
Yeah, I know.
We saw them play twice. We got in, I don't even know what day it was, Sunday, and saw them play the Stars. And then we saw the game outdoors. There were long stretches of each game where they weren't competitive. And that's not me saying it. That's the players saying it. That's the ultimate indictment. I can say whatever I want. It was the players saying it. And I think the reason they were so upset on Tuesday is because they saw the Winter Classic as an opportunity to change, to be in the spotlight, to give their best effort, and to use it as a springboard into the new year, right? It's New Year's Eve. Everybody's got resolutions. We're going to be better. We're going to be more competitive. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. And then, you know, it's like me eating chocolate at like 1 o'clock in the morning on New Year's Day.
Yeah, blew that New Year's resolution. No, listen, I get it. Listen, we'll go from we will – I want to continue this with the Blackhawks, but I do want to say that to go from – the bottom of the league standings to the top, we'll have Darren Millard, our good friend. Maybe we'll dog walk Millard during this the interview we'll have with him, and that's not going to be good for Millard, but it'll be fun for us. He's going to join us soon enough, shortly here on this podcast, talk a lot of the Vegas Golden Knights. Millard does pregame intermissions, postgames, broadcasting stuff with the Vegas Golden Knights. So there's obviously a lot of good there with Darren, but I do want to continue this here. With the Blackhawks, Sean, because you brought it up. You said the word competitive, right? I watch them and I say, okay, they're not good enough, right? We know that they're not good enough. They're not a talented enough team. They're not a good enough team. But then you see some of the goals that were scored, that we've saw scored against them in the last two games, and a lot of it's happening recently too in this five-game winning streak. Point shots. And Anders Sorensen brought this up after the game, after the Winter Classic. You know, Cam Fowler scores two on point shots, right? I mean, those are shots that they're finding their way through. I think there was another one. It was Justin Faulk had a point shot that went in. He had another one that hit off the post that was scored on a backdoor off the post. Those are shots that are getting through, and they can't. Those shots have to get blocked. Those shots have to get disrupted. And that's what it is. We know they're not the most talented team, and nobody's expecting them to be in the playoffs, but you got to get yourself in front of a shot there. You've got to help out your goaltender, and that's what Nick Foligno talked about too. He said it too. He's like, listen, Peter Mrazek, it's a different environment for goaltenders, especially, you know, in that outdoor game. You don't pick up the puck as easily when it's coming from distance. You got to help him out. And they're not helping out their goalies. They're not jumping in front of a shot. They're not making that play, clearing the front of the net, doing those little things that really enable you to go from a team that isn't very good to a team that is competitive, at least. And they have not been competitive. That's the problem. Talent-wise, they're far from what they think they're going to be in a couple of years, okay? Bedard is terrific. He needs a lot of help. But they can do these other things. And they're not doing these other things. And that's, I think, the biggest issue that the Blackhawks have right now is that. Because we're not expecting them to go ahead and win 45 games and be a playoff team this year.
Yeah, and I mean, look, the pieces are there. Some of them. There's more coming. Obviously, they're going to have a very good pick this year. Unless things change drastically. And I think you need to give a little bit of time, because change is always hard. With Sorensen coming in, I think there's going to be a grace period, or there should be a grace period. But you can tell now that it's become personal for the players. Nobody wants to be associated with this. Look, Alex Vlasic, a really good young defenseman for the Blackhawks, did the blog for us, you know, about the experiences, and he was great, you know, leading up to the game and everything, talking about, you know, his backyard rink and all that. And then after the game, you know, he was embarrassed. Like, that's what it's become. Like, you put yourself in front of all these people and you don't represent yourself. You don't represent who you think you are well enough. And that hurts.
Yeah. No, and that's where they were at after the Winter Classic. And it was very interesting to be in their room, after their dressing room after the game, because you the honest, raw approach. You said Foligno was irate. Bedard was really good. You know, he was honest. Taylor Hall was emotional, right? Taylor Hall was almost in tears, basically, because this was their biggest event. of the year. This was their biggest game of the year. They know it, too. It's not going to get bigger for them than the Winter Classic. They're not making the playoffs. They're not going to have games in March and April that matter. This is the one, and they wanted to put out a big showing. They didn't. However, the Blues did. The Blues did, Sean. So I'll ask you this. The Blues are 9-5-3 under Jim Montgomery. We just saw them play very well against, you know, the Blackhawks, who are right now at the bottom of the league standings. They're 3 points out. Vancouver's ahead of them by 2. Calgary's up by 3. Calgary's in the second wild card right now. There's a couple of games in hand that both the Flames and the Canucks have on the Blues. But do you think the Blues could be a playoff team? Do you think that they, I mean, they're not far off. Do they have the pieces in your head, in your mind, to be a playoff team?
Yes, especially because the two teams you just talked about ahead of them. I don't have full faith in either of those teams. Vancouver's really struggling right now. Demko hasn't been good as he comes back from injury. Now Quinn's hurt, you know, and what happens there. Miller hasn't scored. Like, are they a playoff team? And then Calgary, you know, nobody expected them to be where they are. Can they do it for another 40-plus games? And I think St. Louis does have the pieces to be a playoff-caliber team. Look, Cam Fowler had 2 goals in his 1,000th game. He looks really good for them. He looks rejuvenated. Yeah. You know, and I don't know that he wanted change per se. You know, he had been with the Ducks forever, and there's some cachet in that, but he looks revitalized playing for a team where games matter every night and where you know the results are important. And, you know, they had good structure. They played really, really well. And, you know, they don't do that every night yet, but they do it. And then they have Binnington. And you know, if he gets good, that makes all the difference.
Well, you mentioned Fowler, and I thought you make a good point there. Like, he looks rejuvenated. It's just the idea. To me, it's the idea of going from a team that you knew was going nowhere this season and was in a rebuilding development mode, and you're a veteran guy approaching 1,000 games. You don't want that, right? You don't want that. You've tasted success. You've tasted the playoffs. You want to be there. You don't want that, but it drags you down. It does. It drags you down, and then you go to a team that's trying to build itself back up that isn't thinking rebuild. They're thinking, let's go here. I mean, this is why they added Holloway and Broberg in the offseason through the way they did, and why they go out and get a Cam Fowler. Like, they want to be a playoff team. They can sense it, and it changes you as a player, I think, and you go from a mindset shift, right? I mean, you go from a mindset of, okay, no matter what I do, it's not going to be enough here, to a mindset of, what I do really matters here. And I think that makes a big difference in a player's mind. You always play hard. You play to win, all that stuff. But when you know your team is in a different situation, it's got to be hard on a player. And Fowler goes to St. Louis, and he's got some offense going. He's got 3 goals now in 9 games. He looks good. He can play 22 minutes a night. He doesn't look like a guy who's been overly taxed in 1,000 games in his career. He's still got wheels. I like that addition. I think that they can be. Look, I was liking Utah. I still do like Utah, but they've now dropped 4 games in a row, right? Just when you want to believe, they've lost 4 games in a row. I don't believe in Calgary. I haven't all season. I'm surprised they're still where they're at. Vancouver's inner tension there kind of scares me. So you look at St. Louis and you say, why not St. Louis, right? Why not? And there's a lot of reasons why. Binnington's really good. The defense is solid. They have guys up front that can score. They're not Colorado, right? They're not Edmonton, right? They're not even LA or Winnipeg, but they're in the mix.
Well, they don't have enough guys that can score. That's the biggest problem, and I think it's something that their GM Armstrong will fix, right? I think, you know, he's been aggressive at deadlines. I think he'll understand that they need more firepower. You know, it's pretty much Kyrou and Holloway and pray for rain, right? Like,
yeah. Well, Robert Thomas can score. Braden Schenn can muck it up and get some goals too.
Yeah.
You know, they've got more than you're giving them credit for there. And I think they've got a little bit of punch on the back end now, some added punch on the back end now with Fowler. Broberg can deliver a little bit there too.
Yeah, no, and I do. Look, and Thomas has been hurt, you know, for part of it, and he's over a point a game to this point in the season. So good for him. I'll tell you what, when the offer sheet happened, I was one of the people that was kind of like, I wonder what they're doing here and why they're doing it, and you know, what's it going to be like? It's been brilliant for them. Holloway has 14 goals. He's 26 points. He's plus 8. Broberg's plus 11. And you knew that Broberg, he was a very highly touted player, saw some time in the Stanley Cup final, looked like he was finally finding his game. And then he comes to St. Louis and he's given a full opportunity, you know, to be in the lineup every day, and he's embraced it. And, you know, now you look at the price that's paid for those two players and you're like, wow, that's cheap.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. It's cheap and you're not overpaying for what they're delivering for you either, right? I mean, you're not. It's less than $5 million a year. I think it's like 4.5 or 4.58, somewhere in that neighborhood. So you're paying less than $10 million for these two guys, and they've given you good minutes. And I thought it was brilliant what Doug Armstrong did to do that. I really did, because he is not a GM that's looking to rebuild. He's not saying, let's gather draft capital. Let's gather all the draft capital we can and do what Chicago's doing, essentially, right? Essentially do what Chicago's doing. He doesn't want to do that. So he went out and got guys who've played NHL games, and he got them by giving up some of the draft capital. It was a little bit of a risk, but you know what? You give the contracts. I don't think they're overextending themselves on these contracts. The Oilers decided not to match, so you get them. If the Oilers do match, then you go a different direction, and you're getting guys who were approaching that next level in their careers, and now they're reaching that next level in their careers with you as opposed to with Edmonton or another team.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, all this talk about draft capital is great. Every year we get to the draft, and well, this team has not – what?
Oh, yeah, 9 picks, right? 10 picks,
yeah, 9
right?
picks. Yeah. And well, how many of them are going to pan out?
Right.
You can have 15 picks if one makes it, and the other team has 3 picks and one makes it. Who had a better draft? So – I think, you know, your pro scouts and your ability to use your pro scouts and to kind of harvest talent that's already developed or being developed in a pro atmosphere where you can see, look, in the draft, you're taking 18-year-old kids and you're projecting them at 23 and 24. Now, even I can look at Celebrini or Bedard and be like, you know what, that kid can play in the NHL.
Yeah.
But what about all these other guys? Like, you're looking at him and you're like, oh, I think he could be a two-way player, you know, in 6 years. Maybe, maybe not. So by trading for already established players or players that are really close, you know, that you see something in, like Colorado's trying to do that now in season with all the trades they've made. These are clearly some guys that they believe in, you know, that are pro players and are on the cusp and haven't made it with other teams and whatever, and they see something from their scouts where they're saying, yeah, we can get this player at a relatively cheap price and let's see what he can do in our system. And it's huge. To me, it might even be more important than the draft.
I'm so happy you brought up Colorado, because I definitely wanted to get to the Avalanche before we will be getting to Darren Millard, our guest, you know, who is just terrific, talking about the Vegas Golden Knights. And he has his own new podcast as well that he'll promote. We'll allow him to do such a thing as well. But Sean, you brought up the Avalanche. They're clicking right now, and in-season trades, you brought it up, right? They addressed the situation. They saw goaltending that wasn't good enough. And instead of saying, oh, this team's not good enough, all right, we're going to punt here, and, you know, we're going to see if we can get some draft capital, right? No. They traded for Scott Wedgwood on November 29th. They traded for Mackenzie Blackwood on December 9th. They're 9-2 in their last 11 games. They've got a 5-game winning streak. Their goaltending has improved dramatically. They've given Blackwood a 5-year deal. And all of a sudden, the Colorado Avalanche, who were, I think they were 6-8 at one point this season. They were 13-12 at one point this season. All of a sudden, through 38 games, they got 23 wins. They're right there. They look like a Stanley Cup contender again. Look what goaltending can do for you. Changes everything.
Yeah. And you're surprised.
No, I'm not. Well, no, no, no.
Yes,
I'm
you
not
are.
Surprised. No, you know why? Because they changed the goaltending. If they continued down the path that they were on, this was not going to be a very good team. The goaltending wasn't good enough. The goaltending with Georgiev and Anunin had an 873 save percentage in 26 games. The goaltending with Wedgwood and Blackwood has a 934 save percentage in 11 games. It's a smaller sample size. I get it. McKinnon, Rantanen, you know, these guys are terrific. They've gotten some health back, too. Manson's back in the lineup. Nichushkin was. Now he's out again. Drouin is still out. Wood is still out. But the team was being set back by goaltending. Now they've gotten better goaltending from the guys that they've added, and they look like a Stanley Cup contender again.
And Gabe Landeskog is taking part in the morning skate today. So add that to the list. Add that to the list. It's coming.
You can add it. I'm not jumping at that yet. We've heard this before.
But you did not believe.
No, not with Georgiev in net.
No, you did not. You did not believe with the Wood brothers either.
Well, listen, I don't know that I would have given Mackenzie Blackwood a 5-year contract. But if you believe with the Avalanche, the way they play, their system, that you're going to get this quality goaltending out of him, because he's better than Georgiev, and you're going to get quality goaltending, then you probably also believe the price for him is going to go up as the season goes on. So you nip it in the bud now. You get that done now. And they do. We'll see how a 5-year contract for him pans out, but that's not the discussion now. The discussion now is the goaltending he is delivering for you right now, and Wedgwood, who is a solid backup. He's always been. And if Blackwood can be a 1A starter, which we have yet to see in a, you know, on a consistent basis, team's right there. Then it's Stanley Cup or bust again in Colorado.
It always has been. I've never backed away from that.
You couldn't have been thinking that when Georgiev was in net. You couldn't have thinking it for real that they were going to be it.
Of course I could. Look at their roster.
Look at the goaltending.
Yeah, look at it.
I think we're at an impasse here.
I don't. You have this small sample size from Mackenzie Blackwood. Like, what has he ever done?
That's why I wouldn't have given him the 5-year contract. But technically, talk to other people around goaltending. He looks better. He is better. He was pretty good with San Jose. He was pretty good with San Jose. And they were not a good team. And he was pretty good there.
Yeah.
So let's see. Let's talk about this a month from now, 2 months from now. I'm sure we will. But right now, I think we need to talk to Darren Millard, because he was fantastic talking to us about the Vegas Golden Knights and everything going on, plus his own podcast. Here is our interview with our good buddy, the Vegas Golden Knights broadcaster, Darren Millard. Darren, thanks so much for doing this. We love having you on. How you doing? All good?
You love having me on so much that I haven't been on this year.
Right. Well, we love you that much that we wait until the new year to bring you on. That's the beauty of it. It's really Sean's fault, I think. I'm going to blame Sean. Sean, will you take the hit for this?
It's always my fault.
There we go.
Everything is my fault. I've learned to accept it and to roll with it.
Everybody's got to have a role, man. Play your part.
Play your role. That's it. Now you can play your role. We'll allow you to play your role here, Darren. So Vegas Golden Knights, they blow a lead against Montreal. What's wrong with them? What's wrong with this team?
The second time this year they blew a third period lead. But they've got 14 comeback wins. So they're still very heavily on the right side of things. Sorry, my cat jumped up here again. But they've found more ways to win games than they've allowed wins or 2 points to slip away. So things are still good. I always think over the holidays, every team's going to have one of those, which you aren't quite on top of your game. And that happened to be theirs. We'll see how they respond here in the early part of 2025.
Before we get to the Vegas Golden Knights, because there's a ton to talk about, I'm curious about your impressions of the Canadiens.
Inconsistent, but fun. I think they're still young. I think they are still very much learning how to play and put a consistent stretch together. But there are times during the year where they're going to look like they're farther ahead of schedule than they actually are. And then they're going to have a couple of games where you go, well, that's kind of what we anticipated at the start of the season. So I think there's strong building blocks. I think the change that they made in goal is going to give them a better depth in that department. I think that they've got some great pieces on the back end and up front. I think that they're probably this is the best part of their game. So I think it's really good. But from a structure and consistency standpoint, it's not there yet.
I'm glad Sean asked that because we will get to Vegas. But you worked in Canada. You're from Canada. You worked in Canadian markets for years. The question I have, and I've had it all season with the Montreal Canadiens, is how long does the patience last among the fans, right? I mean, this has been a little bit now. They're still in it, that building up part. How long does it last in your mind? Is this the last season where before patience runs out?
Well, I think you have to be close to challenging for a playoff spot next year, which means you got to be in a playoff spot for much of the year in and around that last seed, that wild card two or wild card spot, because cracking the top three in that division is going to be difficult for the next number of years, but you got to be in the mix going forward. So this would be your last middle square on the bingo card where you get a pass on it. I still don't think they're going to make the playoffs in the next 2 years. It's just too jammed up there. But without any pressure, without people calling for changes and dramatic changes throughout the organization, I think this is probably the last time where they'll go into a year knowing that there's not going to be significant pressure. And I think that's a good thing for the organization. And I think that there's positives that they can count on, that the steps that they've made from last year to this year. But it doesn't always go in a linear path. Ask Ottawa, ask Detroit. Certainly the Buffalo Sabres know that. So they've been trying for a number of years, and they're not quite there just yet. And Montreal is on a similar path, just 2 years behind.
Well, I'll tell you what, that Hudson's a pretty nice player.
He's great finally player.
Figured out the game. There's a good chance he's going to win Rookie of the Year.
Good opportunity for him. I think that that he controls the game. He certainly generates chances. He's fun to watch. And I'll keep going back to that word, fun. Montreal's a fun team to watch. I'll go to the two games that the Vegas played against Montreal this year. Golden Knights dominated the first period in Montreal and then scored five goals in the second period to put the game away. They weren't even close to being on the level of a top-tier team in the NHL. And then game number two back in Vegas, Montreal got much better as the game went on and found a way to pull out a win in the third period and looked every bit much of a team that's ready to challenge for a playoff spot in the Eastern Conference. So somewhere in the middle is where I believe that they are, but what I like about their team is that they have the building blocks at every position, significant building blocks at every position that you can now complement going forward.
Yeah, no question about it. But let's bring it back to Vegas, because Montreal's fun. Vegas is just really good. And Sean brought up Hudson, potential for Calder. I wonder, we've seen a lot of really good hockey out of Jack Eichel since he's been with the Vegas Golden Knights. Is this the best regular season hockey this season that we've seen from him? And is he a Hart Trophy guy for you at this point?
Well, yes, Hart Trophy. There's so many other fantastic players and superstars and putting up massive point totals that I think it's going to be hard for him to fit into the final three. But if he went most valuable to your team, and we get into that debate all the time about what the Hart Trophy is, I think Jack Eichel fits that bill. It's the best I've ever seen him play. And the point totals are above his personal best pace. He's tracking towards a 100-point season for the first time in his career. The power play points are there. He's not scoring as much as he used to, as we've seen in the past. But that's come at the value of power play assists this year, and he's just absolutely got the Golden Knights on a franchise best percentage that they've had with the man advantage. And then you add in the other side of the puck, and that's not as sexy, but it's really, really gratifying on Jack's side of things and the coaching staff to see him take those next steps. They had defending a power play, a 5-on-3 the other night against the Calgary Flames. Jack was the first forward over the boards, playing with the two defensemen. And there was no other thought. That's the first guy over the boards. Take the draw and defend it. And I had an opportunity to sit down and chat with him the other day about that. And he takes great pride in what he's been able to do to his game and expand that side of his game. And certainly is proud of what he's been able to do as a penalty killer and a 200-foot player, but without sacrificing the points. We've heard time and time again about the Yzerman example. Like, he had to pull it back to become a great player. Jack's adding to his point totals. Again, he's going to be a 100-point player if he stays healthy for the first time ever, but he's better than ever on the defensive side of it as a plus 21, which is among the league leaders in that regard. So he should be a Hart Trophy candidate. Should be a Selke Trophy candidate. That's more of a longevity. You work your way into that category after a couple of years, and then you finally win it. I don't know whether at the end of the year he'll get it because of playing in the Western Conference, but he's certainly as good as I've ever seen him.
I like that you said that the Hart Trophy is for the MVP to his team.
That's what it says in the book, right?
That's what it says in the program.
But it doesn't always go that way.
No, it's become a who's the best player in the league.
Which I don't have a problem with if you want to go that path. But it's
we have
two different interpretations of it.
Yeah, and you have voters doing two different things. And the other issue for me is how can, even if you do it by the MVP, how can you be the MVP of your team when there's another candidate for the award, right? So, like, people always talk about McDavid. He's the hands-down MVP. Draisaitl's in that conversation with him every year. Same thing with MacKinnon and Rantanen and Makar. Like, how can you be the MVP when there's multiple candidates?
I think you need two awards there. Most valuable to your team and best player. And that's the only way to really solve it, or say it's best player. Because the most valuable to your team, that's unfair to, I think, if you have it most valuable to your team, that's unfair to the best player. That means the best player is probably not getting an award, and that's not right.
Well, that's why I asked you about Jack Eichel with the Hart Trophy, because there are eight. He doesn't have 50 points yet. There are eight players with 50 points in the league right now. Four of the top five are guys Sean just mentioned, right? In McDavid, Draisaitl, Rantanen, and MacKinnon. And MacKinnon, you know, might be running away with a scoring lead at this point, and the Avalanche have been playing great. But Eichel, he has a lot of help. There's no question about it, because I think Vegas is the best team built from all the way through in the league. But the what he's doing and what you pointed out, him being a first forward over the boards on a 5-on-3 kill, right? I mean, that to me is the growth and the maturation, and it's the step that you need to take to be most valuable to your team. And I think Jack has done that. I want to see more guys who are top offensive players killing penalties. Like, I don't understand some of these times where guys who are top offensive guys are not killing penalties, because you get in a situation, and I'm not saying, look, Connor Bedard's not the right example because he's not ready for that yet, but there's a situation. We were at the game the other day at the United Center against Dallas, and, you know, Tyler Bertuzzi takes a major penalty, and Connor Bedard's off the ice for 5+ minutes, can't see the ice, right? I mean, that's it kills your team when you can't put your best players on the ice for that long. I think guys should be killing penalties more, and I'm glad to see that Jack is doing it.
I see some coaches' examples of, and I understand it, that you don't want your top players killing penalties because you want to manage their minutes. And so they're right away on this. The Alexander Ovechkin is a great example. If there's a bench minor, he's serving it because he's coming right back on the ice. I understand that thinking, but if you've got a player that's bought in, that wants those minutes and wants to broaden their game and be in the thick of the action at both ends of the ice, then lean into it. And certainly it's a Vegas staple the way they do. Mark Stone kills penalties. William Karlsson kills penalties. Jack Eichel kills penalties. Those are three of their top players, and they're all as valuable on their side of the red line as they are in the other end.
You know why, as a coach, I don't want to see my best player kill a penalty?
Shot blocks.
It is dangerous yeah. work.
That's valid too.
And why are you putting your players out there as cannon fodder? Sit them down for 2 minutes and say, here, catch your breath. When we're 5-on-5, you go. Well, and you can dominate an offensive end.
If you're not good at it or you don't want to do it, there's no sense being out there to do it. Right, quite honestly. If you're going to be hesitant at all to get in that lane and block the shot because you don't want to get hurt or it's not your thing, because it's not everybody's thing to lean into a slap shot or a shot on the penalty kill where you're basically a sitting duck, then why do it? But if you're willing to go there, like Jack has, Jack's game has grown into that from the Buffalo days to now. And when I had the conversation with him the other day, it was 5-minute talk all about killing penalties and being on the defensive side of it. And I stood up as I left and said, I didn't think I'd ever have that conversation with you, mm-hmm. where it was all about defending. There wasn't one discussion about being on the other side of the red line. And it shows where he has taken his game. Now, if you're going to be an MVP candidate, you're going to have to be top five in scoring or do something spectacular as a defenseman or a goaltender. But if you're a forward and you're not in the top five in scoring, I think it's really hard to be in that conversation. And I don't think Jack will ever be in the top five in scoring the way the Golden Knights approach the game.
Right. It's different. So to get off the Jack Eichel hour here, but I wanted to ask you, I always thought that Vegas would be a good team this year, but I thought they might take a hit when you lose Marchessault and you lose Chandler Stephenson, right? Mm-hmm. They haven't taken that hit. Why is that? What are they doing? Is it the structure, the buy-in, the culture? What is the reason that they haven't really taken that hit? In fact, they're better than they were.
So you let a number of players go that had influence on this team and put up numbers. And you mentioned a couple of them. I'll throw Will Carrier into that mix yep. as well, a longtime Vegas Golden Knight. But when you open it up, it allows for growth. And you guys have all worked in establishments where stars have left, big personalities have left, and you've watched other people step in where you went, or maybe it was yourself, where I didn't know I could do that. But I had the room and the opportunity, and now I can spread my wings a little bit. And you've seen that out of Keegan Kolesar and Brett Howden, two players in particular, already produced career highs in goals. Not stars in the National Hockey League, but Brett Howden leads this team in goal scoring at 15, tied with Ivan Barbashev, and Keegan Kolesar is pushing 10. He's never hit double digits before. So there's the growth aspect. Then you get into the professional scouting and the hockey operations side of things. They brought in Victor Olofsson, who was cast adrift by Buffalo. And he has become a power play specialist. He missed 24 games or a bunch of games after an early season injury. But 5 of his 8 goals are on the power play. And mm-hmm. he's going to hit 15 to 20. Tanner Pearson came here on a professional tryout offer. People weren't sure whether he had the speed to stay and keep up with the game. He's got 7 goals. Like they're professional scouting, finding the right players to fit the system, have fit really well along with the growth from within, which they've certainly seen great progress on in the likes of Kolesar and Howden.
Has this team become hardened to change, though? Like, you look at the Rangers right now, and a lot of people, myself included, are like, part of their problem is that they're resistant to change. They feel like it hasn't been done right, whatever it might be, and they've kind of lost their way. The Golden Knights have had radical change since year one.
Yeah. Not afraid to make difficult decisions.
Yeah, players have left. People have been upset. But the culture never changes, even when they're upset.
People get upset, but then they get over it because the team wins. It keeps winning. That's the difference. The Rangers are upset, but they're not winning. So when you double down on that, it creates a bigger cloud over top of you. Look, guys love Chandler Stephenson. Guys absolutely adored William Carrier. They weren't, if they could play with him forever, they would. But they recognize the contracts that they received, and they look at the cap and know that that wasn't going to work. But Vegas was also proactive. Tomas Hertl coming over at last year's trade deadline didn't pay big dividends last year because he was rehabbing and only played seven games at the end of the year and wasn't his normal self in that first round series against Dallas. But they get him for $6 million. San Jose's paying for some of that, and they get him for five more years. That's big preparation going forward. Noah Hanifin, they acquire him. They extend him. That's last year's acquisition, but it's planning for the future. So they've been able to offset those departures with pretty significant acquisitions along the way, which makes the fan base, if we're talking about the fan base, much more accepting when you turn around and watch production from those players. And then some of the longstanding guys in there used to seeing on the ice produce. It's a pretty magical performance, and they're challenging for first overall. They've got the best points percentage in the National Hockey League. Did I expect that at the start of the year? No. They're ahead of schedule from what I thought, but I still believe that this team would make the playoffs in the Pacific Division.
But you're also, I mean, you mentioned Hanifin and Hertl. They bring them in last year, so they don't have to come in the offseason where they've got to get adjusted, right. And they're already adjusted. They already know the culture. They're already in it at this point. They have places to live. They don't have to find anything. They can come to training camp this year, and they're a part of it. And that makes a huge difference.
Right. So Victor Olofsson has to come in, find his place on the team, get used to guys. Alexander Holtz has to find a place to live, get used to a whole new team, and get adjusted. Cole Schwint was picked up off waivers. He hit the ground running with it. And Tanner Pearson, there's four guys. Can you imagine if it was another three?
Right.
Well, then you're getting into half your roster or four. It goes pretty deep. So that familiarity from the Hertl side of things, Hanifin with Jack Eichel, and that familiarity with Boston certainly helps. So, yeah, and those are big parts of the team, big personalities with this team. Hertl especially, I love that guy. He's always smiling. He's got the great quote here: "Fun must be always." Like you haven't lived until you spent 5 minutes with Tomas Hertl, and I challenge you not to walk away with your cheeks just sore, like you've been deadlifting for 3 hours because you've just been smiling the whole time.
Why limit it to 5 minutes? One of my goals is to spend a day with that guy in Vegas. 24 hours with Tomas Hertl in Vegas would be one of the greatest stories in the history of mankind.
Because you think he's all over, like, enjoying the strip, enjoying the fun, enjoying what Vegas
whatever
has to
it
offer.
Is, Vegas has so much to offer, and he has so much to give. It's the perfect marriage.
Okay, I played some hockey in Dauphin, Manitoba. You guys ever heard of Dauphin, Manitoba?
Yeah, where Barry Trotz
is from.
Yeah, yeah. Dauphin, it's 10,000 people. I wouldn't call it the most vibrant city. I love it. I have lots of friends there. But it's not your first place in your vacation list. Tomas Hertl could have a blast in Dauphin, Manitoba. Like it doesn't matter where he goes, that guy's going to have fun.
Yeah. I want to spend a day with Tom.
Awesome. Yeah.
I want to spend a day with him in Prague. That's what I want to do.
And, he thinks the game like very few players. Like, he is so dialed in on every, whether it's faceoffs or controlling the puck in the offensive zone or power plays. He watches other teams. He is an absolute student of the game.
Yeah. All right. Listen, we've waited long enough. Yes. Now you can do your pitch for your new podcast. Before we let you go, the floor is yours. I'll just give a little. 100% Hockey is the name. You and John Shannon, you could take it from there.
So I did the Chirp. You guys are familiar. We worked together with the National Hockey League on the Chirp. So the Chirp is morphing into, merging into 100% Hockey. Part of the reason is John Shannon wants something that's just shouts hockey. So he didn't feel like the Chirp did that. So we'll put the Chirp name aside. It's 100% Hockey. It's going to be Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So some of those topics, and you guys from your podcast know that things die out. They don't, the shelf life is short. So by doing 3 days a week, we're going to be able to hit on everything. And we're going to talk to people around the league. And with John and I are just going to be able to shoot the breeze a lot. The guy's been around hockey for over 50 years, and he's awesome. The television side, I love tweaking his brain on that. So it's 100% Hockey, 3 days a week. Pick it up wherever you get your podcast, NHL.com. They'll have a post there. We're looking forward to it. Plus, I like to get under John's skin every now and then.
Well, that's how I feel about Dan. And I can't wait to listen to it. I've known John forever. You know, he's involved with the league. When I started over 20 years ago, one of the great minds. I've been on European trips with him, the whole thing. Not that you're not great, but now it's doubling up. There's like 90 years of hockey institutionalized knowledge there.
Yeah, did you just call me old?
I think you called John old, too. So you'll have that.
Well, you called John old. You said it was over 50. It was over 50 years.
Yeah, I was trying to call him old. I didn't want you to turn around and call me a fogey. You're making this sound like Statler and Waldorf from the Muppets.
You use bingo card. Only old people like me and you use bingo card.
Oh, hey, the casino just down the street from me, bingo night. Every night they have a bingo hall, and it's awesome.
But it's electronic, right? Or do you have the dabbers?
I have not seen a dabber, but I think you could.
Oh, maybe John Shannon has his own dabber set. We'll put him.
No, John used to use it when you had to circle it with a pen. Yeah. The dabbers weren't invented yet.
Oh, wow. I hope
he had his own colored chips.
Yeah. Make sure he listens to this when you talk to him. I know it debuts tomorrow. That's Friday. Have a great time with it. Good luck with it. Darren, thanks so much for jumping on with us.
Great stuff there with Darren Millard, and that interview was brought to you by Skip. Skip to the good part and get groceries, meals, and essentials delivered right to your door on Skip. So, Sean, we've hit on the Blackhawks, the Blues, the Avalanche, and obviously the Vegas Golden Knights. How about we go east for a little bit here on the back end? Carolina Hurricanes. Hey, Sean, they're 6-8-1 in their last 15 games. What's wrong with the Carolina Hurricanes? He's going to tell me nothing. Health.
That's it. Once they're completely healthy, there's no issue with the Carolina Hurricanes. They're an elite team in the Eastern Conference. I don't know that they're a Stanley Cup winning team. They haven't been able to figure that part of it out yet. But I'll tell you one thing: 6-8-1, 8-6-1, 14-1, 1-14. The other seven teams that get into the playoffs, they don't want to look across and see Rod Brindamore and the Carolina Hurricanes. I know that for a fact.
The thing that can, one, Marty Natchez had the unbelievable start to this season, right? He was leading the league in scoring around U.S. Thanksgiving, 37 points through 22 games. And in the last 15, where they're 6-8-1, he has 8 points. So his scoring production has dropped dramatically. And maybe it's a market correction that you could see coming with Natchez. You don't want to have it come, but all right, it's come. He's got to get it going again. Sebastian Aho's produced a little bit, but they're not getting enough. And the two guys that they really need a lot from are not delivering right now. Svechnikov has 8 points in the last 15, and Marty Natchez has 8 points in the last 15. Those guys got to get going. They need offense from those guys. They got to produce. They're not scoring enough. They're at about 2.5 goals per game. But the thing that concerns me a little bit, I guess, with the Hurricanes is Pyotr Kochetkov. This was his opportunity to really run with it, right? Freddie Anderson's out again, and now Kochetkov is getting an opportunity to really get a chance to, can you establish yourself as a number one goalie? Well, in his last 10 starts, Sean, he's facing only 24 shots per game, but he's giving up too many goals. So it's an 893 save percentage that he has. So the Canes are not giving up much, as you would expect. They have the puck a lot. But when they do give it up, and I can't tell you, I don't have the stats in front of me and all the goals in front of me to say how many of them are high danger chances, mid danger, low danger, all that stuff. But when they do give it up, Kochetkov is giving up that extra goal every game, or at least every game and a half, that's causing this team to lose. Why is that happening? That's a whole different conversation that, you know, revolves a lot of statistical breakdown and analysis and whatnot. But this is your opportunity, Kochetkov, to be the number one goalies in this league. They play to a better than 900 save percentage. They're more around 910. And right now, in these last 10 games, he's playing at an 893, and that's a problem.
That's a problem for the whole team. Well, all I know is you said they don't score enough. They're a little under three goals. What are the Carolina Hurricanes doing in the playoffs?
They stop the puck from going in the net, and they do
they
it
play,
very often.
They play 2-1 hockey games.
Yes,
my
they
God,
do.
I covered
too many on the wrong side of it, though.
I covered a series between the Florida Panthers and the Carolina Hurricanes a couple of years ago, and there might have been 8 goals scored in the whole series.
Did they win any of those games?
No.
They lost them all?
Yes.
By 1 goal?
Yes.
They need more offense. They have
so
to
how
be
is that Peter?
More.
How is that Peter Kochetkov's goal?
Well, I'm talking about right now. This is an opportunity. I'm limiting this with Kochetkov to right now. That this is his big opportunity to go ahead, take that next step, be a number one because he's the future number one there. And right now, it looks like it's been a little bit of a struggle at times for him. And maybe I'm nitpicking at the goaltending, but they're allowing only 24 shots on goal per game, which is terrific. And when you allow 24 shots on goal per game and you give up 3 goals per game and you don't score enough, you're going to lose a lot of those games 3-2. Now, I don't know the scores are, you know, change and whatnot, but the average is about that, right? So They need more offense, Sean. You just brought it up. You made a great point. The Hurricanes, we know exactly what they are. We know the way they're going to play. We know when they get to the playoffs and they're going to make the playoffs, the way they're going to play in the playoffs. But if Svechnikov and Natchez and Jarvis, Brent Burns has to deliver more on the back end, if those guys can't produce that extra goal per game, they're going to lose just as they have in the playoffs every year.
Yeah, all I know is right before we left to go to the Winter Classic, the Hurricanes and the Devils played in a home-and-home. Each one of them won their home game.
It was almost prison rules hockey.
Well, the game in New Jersey was fantastic. Sign me up right now.
Yeah, I get you. Yeah.
For a series. There was no problem with goals being scored. It was just fast, nasty, skilled hockey. Like, I look at the Carolina Hurricanes, and I'm not fazed by them at all. Like, I'm not worried. Like, everybody has their teams, and I think people who listen to this program know that I like the Carolina Hurricanes, know that I like the Colorado Avalanche, and may have been scratching their head the whole time when I kept on putting Colorado higher in the Super 16 than everybody else. There's a reason. Because of the way that they play hockey, not over a 10-game stretch. You can throw 10-game stretches at me all you want. How do they play over the long term? What's their identity? What's their DNA? I think I know what Colorado's DNA is. I think I know what their identity is. I'm not concerned that over 15 games they've only won 8 or 6.
But you said it yourself. You don't know if they're Stanley Cup good, right? But shouldn't they be by this point?
Who's Stanley Cup good?
Right now?
Yeah.
I would say Florida, for sure, is Stanley Cup good. They may be the only team right now, I would say, in the Eastern Conference that I can say, okay, yeah, that team right now, I could pick to win the Stanley Cup right now.
And what about in the West? Who's Stanley Cup good?
Vegas, Colorado, Edmonton.
How can they all be Stanley Cup good? Only one goes to the Stanley Cup.
Well, I'm saying I wouldn't be shocked if any of those three go to the Stanley Cup final. I think I would be more surprised if it's Dallas or LA or Winnipeg or Vancouver or Calgary or,
My point is that teams that are Stanley Cup good don't always get to the Stanley Cup. It's a cruel, cruel business, the playoffs. And you could be a really good team, and you're not going to get to the Stanley Cup. You might not even get out of the first round.
But I don't think the Hurricanes are good enough to get there. That's the point. I don't think they have enough to get
there. There's 30 teams that aren't good enough to get there.
Well, no, there's 30 teams that don't get there. We're talking here on January 2nd.
Then I don't know. If they don't get there, they're not good enough.
Well, yes, but on January 2nd, I'm saying they don't have enough. Florida has enough. It may not get there, but it's got enough right now.
Florida's been shut out four times this month.
Yes, but you're going to tell me that they don't have enough?
I certainly think they have enough, but if these are the rules we want to play by, that they don't score enough goals. Florida's been shut out four times this month, and not by good teams. I guess they don't have enough.
No. You're misconstruing the words here, Mr. Rourke.
I'm trying to
dog walk me here, is what you're trying to do. You know?
I'm not misconstruing anything. I'm trying to understand your logic.
I don't think that the Carolina Hurricanes, once they get to the playoffs, have enough offense to win enough. They don't have enough offense to win 16 games in the playoffs. The Florida Panthers have enough offense to win 16 games in the playoffs. I don't care that they've been shut out four times in the past month. They have enough offense to win 16 games in the playoffs. A, we've seen it, but B, I believe it this season too. The New Jersey Devils, I think, have enough offense to win 16 games in the playoffs. I don't think the Washington Capitals have enough to win 16 games, but they've been terrific this season. Tampa Bay Lightning have enough offense to win 16 games in the playoffs. The Toronto Maple Leafs have enough offense to win 16 games in the playoffs. They might have other issues that have to get looked at. But the Carolina Hurricanes do not have enough offense to win 16 games in the playoffs, and that is the reason why the Carolina Hurricanes have not won 16 games in the playoffs yet under Rod Brind'Amour and with this core. They need more. They added Jake Guentzel. They got to the second round. Didn't work. They need more. And I think that'll be addressed at some point. Let's see who they can address it with. There's not a lot of guys out there. But right now, guys like Svechnikov have not taken their game to the next level. Jarvis is not enough. Aho's not enough. Natchez, is he too inconsistent? I don't know. I mean, we'll see. I don't think so. I think he's really good. Defensively on the back end, I don't think that they get enough offense from their back end. I don't think they have enough. They can play a lot of 2-1 games in the playoffs and look really good doing it and lose them.
Do the Toronto Maple Leafs get enough from their back end?
They don't need to get as much from their back end as the Carolina Hurricanes need for their back end.
I see the goalposts have moved again.
Well, they don't. They don't have to get as much. They
have 7 goals.
Toronto.
Yeah.
From their back end.
Yeah.
How many goals does Toronto Maple Leafs have this season?
I don't know. That wasn't the question. The question was that they don't get enough from their back end.
And I'm telling you, I don't think they need to get enough from their back end. The Toronto Maple Leafs don't need to score as many goals as from their back end. Also, by the way, the Toronto Maple Leafs defend right now, they have to prove it in the playoffs, but they defend pretty darn well.
Yeah, sure. And
so do the Carolina Hurricanes.
The noted playoff scorers that were the...
They're going to win. I'm just saying I think they have enough offense to get there. This debate has gone off the rails. You know what we should do? We should move on.
I think it's related, Dan. We can move on. Can the Toronto Maple Leafs win without Austin Matthews? And with where Austin Matthews is at now with his injury, which has already required a trip to Germany and everything else, does Austin Matthews play in the Four Nations, which starts next month, almost a month from today? Does he make that final roster? Can he make that final roster if you're the Toronto Maple Leafs?
Got to see where he's at a month from now.
I don't.
Well, listen.
He's not on the roster.
If the tournament started on January 12th, no.
I don't care I don't care when the tournament starts.
What if he comes back and he's healthy and he plays good for the next 10, and he comes back and plays 10 games before the tournament starts and he looks good, feels good, plays well? You can't keep him off of that. You can't keep him out of that. You can. I mean, you can attempt to do it, but you can't keep him out of it. What's that?
What's the goal?
The goal is to win the Stanley Cup. I understand that. 100%. But you can't just single out the Maple Leafs on that.
No, I'm not. I'm saying anybody that has a chronic injury, which I think you would have to say Austin Matthews has at this point, that's going to require maintenance, is not really a candidate to play a short tournament where the games are going to pile up on each other and are going to be at a level that you're not going to see again until the Stanley Cup final.
Then you got to pull him from it right now. But who makes that call? Right? Who makes that call? Toronto obviously has to guard for what Toronto can do. And they need Austin Matthews healthy. But who makes the call? Who pulls Austin Matthews out of the Four Nations faceoff on now when it's not for another month and a half or 5 years?
I don't think anybody pulls him now, but I think that conversation's being had. And I think at some point you sit down with the doctor and the doctor says, here's what I see. Here's what I think. Here's your best opportunity to win with your team.
Well, then Austin Matthews has to pull himself in that situation, right? You're paid by the Maple Leafs. You're paid to win in Toronto.
Yeah, I just think it's a
conversation.
I think it's a conversation that you have, and I think everybody has to be unbelievably honest and unselfish. Look, this is a really important tournament, and guys have talked about how, you know, they haven't played in a best on best. But it's not the Olympics, it's the Four Nations.
I agree with that, and there is a difference, no question about it. But when, you know what this means to these guys when they have an opportunity to pull on the jersey that they wear for their country. It's hard to differentiate between that. They wear the country jersey. It's hard to differentiate Olympics, Four Nations. We know there's a difference. They know there's a difference. But when there's an opportunity to play for your country in a best-on-best tournament, this is what these guys want. They want to do it. It comes down to how do you feel physically? Can you get through it? Can you play to your best of your ability and still come back and play to the best of your ability for the Toronto Maple Leafs? If you can't do that, if you benefit from taking that time off because it's now going to benefit your team, the team that's paying you a lot of money, then I think it's well within I think you have an obligation to that team. You have to have an obligation to that team. But it's still – the conversation can be had in whispers right now, but it's still too early. But if you're that worried about a chronic thing and that much, then just pull them now.
Well, I'll tell you what, if I'm Bill Guerin, who's the GM of that team, I'm just thinking about what my other options are.
Well, they have to have, I mean, they have other guys that they're monitoring, right? I mean, they have to have other guys that they're monitoring. And the same situation out west with Quinn Hughes. Quinn Hughes is out week to week right now.
Yeah, but to me, that's different because it's a one-time thing, right? Like isn't something that he's been nursing.
It's undisclosed. What is it? I don't know. Right? I don't know. So,
but it hasn't impacted him in a tangible way to this point.
Correct. Correct. That is correct. Yes.
Austin's has.
Yeah. Well, look, that's going to be interesting to see where it goes from here. It's definitely a topic that needs to be discussed. No question about it. I'm hoping we see Austin Matthews play this weekend soon, right? I'm hoping he gets to be able to play and then he plays well because I want to see Austin Matthews in that tournament. That's me. That's hockey fans selfishly.
Everybody wants to see him.
Yeah.
Like, that wasn't the question I was trying to...
No, I understand. Yeah.
...put on the table. I just, you know... Well, you just kind of look at it and you talk about the Maple Leafs having enough in the playoffs. Like, Austin Matthews is a huge part of that.
No question he's a huge part of it. We'll talk more about that for sure in the coming weeks. But, Sean, this was a lot of fun. And don't forget, the all-quarter-century teams have started. Check out NHL.com for those. The Blackhawks and Blues were announced at the Winter Classic. The Coyotes came after that. Columbus is today, Thursday. Got to check those out. We'll have a conversation about that as well in the coming weeks. This weekend, national games on ABC as well, right? I mean, you got the New York Rangers at the Washington Capitals on Saturday, and you got the Rangers again, so you can get your Rangers fill. ABC and ESPN Plus, Rangers Capitals on Saturday, Rangers at the Blackhawks on Sunday. No Igor Shesterkin. He is on injured reserve. Sean, I think this was a pretty good episode for the first one of 2025.
I think so, too. And you know what I'm going to do when the Blackhawks are on TV on Sunday on ABC?
What are you going to do?
I'm going to have a Chicago handshake.
Oh, please. Don't even describe it. If you've been to Chicago, if you're from Chicago, you know what it is. We had it.
We got to experience it for the first time. And, Dan, I'm shocked at all the times I've been to Chicago. It's got to be over 25 at this point. I had never experienced the Chicago handshake. I had never had, and I know that Bill Price, our managing editor, doesn't listen to this very often. I'd never had an old style.
Really? No. That's terrible on your part, Sean.
No.
That's terrible. Anyway.
And I don't know that I ever need to have one again.
You know what you can do? You can order it on Skip. Because that's what this podcast is brought to you by. Skip. Skip to the good part. Get groceries, meals, and essentials delivered right to your door on Skip.
Can you get Malort on Skip?
I don't know if you can get Malort, but you know what? I'll say it again because I say it before the end of every episode. Enjoy the hockey.